My name is Matt Katz. I'm in for Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. Earlier this year, the Norwegian Nobel Committee made an unexpected announcement. They awarded the Nobel Peace Prize to two journalists. And when Dmitry Muratov and Maria Ressa accepted the award in Oslo a couple of weeks ago, they would become the first journalists to be peace laureates in 80 years. Muratov co-founded Novaya Gazeta, an independent news outlet that pushes to hold Russian President Vladimir Putin accountable. During Putin's tenure, six journalists at the newspaper have been killed. And in the Philippines, Ressa, co-founder of online news publication Rappler, was arrested and eventually found guilty under a controversial anti-cybercrime law after being accused of publishing a false news story about a businessman. It wasn't lost on advocates that she was an outspoken critic of Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte.
For me, it's about two things: abuse of power and weaponization of the law. This isn't just about me, and it's not just about Rappler.
Ressa is right. Around the world, press freedom is being challenged at unprecedented levels. A new report by the Committee to Protect Journalists found that a record 293 journalists have been jailed across the world in the last year alone. 24 additional journalists have been killed because of their coverage, while 18 more died in suspicious circumstances. Authoritarian governments in Asia, Africa, and Europe buck due process as they continue to detain journalists in order to protect their power. Look at Myanmar, which had zero journalists in jail this time last year. All it took was a coup earlier in the year, and now there are 26 journalists in custody. And in China, which holds the highest number of jailed journalists in the world at 50, it's not just journalists that are offending the regime there. China arrested 11 non-journalists this past year just for sending materials to reporters. There is a human toll here that should not be neglected. Back in October, The Takeaway spoke with Washington Post journalist Jason Rezaian about journalism being under attack after he himself was held captive in Iran for 18 months.
I believe in the importance of press freedom and really the need to protect it as a guiding principle of democracy and one that is constantly under threat. My wife actually now works at the Committee to Protect Journalists. This is something that we care deeply about. And I've also told a lot of stories of other people who've been taken hostage by governments especially.
So with us is the editorial director at the Committee to Protect Journalists, Arlene Getz, and Ohumai Amaize, an exiled Nigerian journalist now living in the U.S. I started by asking Arlene about whether there is a prevailing phenomenon that led to many of these arrests around the world.
What we're seeing is that every year these numbers are creeping up. This is the sixth year in a row that we've had more than 250 journalists arrested in jail as of December the 1st, which is when our census is finalized. And it's a disturbing pattern of sort of growing authoritarianism, lack of respect for due process, a sense of impunity around the world. But it's a very disturbing trend in a world which is currently preoccupied by COVID and so many other issues as well.
And I just want to like expand out a little bit to explain to people the importance of this. You know, do you view journalists as sort of a canary in the coal mine when it comes to limiting freedoms across the board?
Absolutely. And that's a very good point. This is not something that's just about journalists. We document journalists because we are the Committee to Protect Journalists and our focus is on press freedom. But every time a journalist is silenced, there's less information that's getting out to the public. And I'm not just talking about politics and other issues here. Think, for example, about COVID. You know, China has a situation where they've imprisoned a woman called Zhan Zhang, who has been there for over a year. She was trying to tell people what was happening with COVID. There are matters of enormous public interest and public importance that do not get publicized when journalists are jailed like this.
Oh, my, you escaped Nigeria. You were granted asylum here in the U.S., and that's all because you were targeted by your country's government for your news coverage. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Yeah, thank you very much. Let me begin by providing a context for the work I did as a TV producer and anchor in Nigeria. In August 2018, when my program launched on Africa Independent Television, which is Nigeria's first and largest privately owned TV network, roughly around 50% of the country's population had access to the internet, with just around 15% active on social media. So majority of Nigerians still rely on traditional media platforms such as radio and television for access to news and information. It was within this context that Kakaki Social was created. That was the TV program that I anchored. It soon became a means through which most Nigerians who didn't have access to the internet or social media connected with conversations by Nigerians on social media platforms. Essentially, it became a bridge between those two audiences. The show focused on conversations around key issues of public interest, from human rights abuses to corruption in government. And the Nigerian government didn't like that. Barely 3 months after the show launched, I started receiving attacks on social media from pro-government handles. Basically, they were trying to discredit the work that I was doing, which had become very impactful. This was a program that kept millions of Nigerians glued to their TV sets on Mondays to Fridays by 8 a.m. But my situation didn't end with the attacks on social media. Strange things started happening. Several times I noticed my car was being followed. I couldn't tell who these people were. I also started receiving physical threats by officials of the Muhammadu Buhari administration in Nigeria on several occasions. Once it's time for my program to go live, my TV network would suddenly experience a blackout. Once the time slot for my program had elapsed, the signals would return. But I became more alarmed when an insider in the Muhammadu Buhari regime, who loved the work that I was doing, showed me WhatsApp conversations in which officials of the regime were plotting to get me arrested and to shut down the program. One of the specific words used in those conversations was slander. They said I was slandering the president, which was just nonsense. Less than a week after this development, the Nigerian government shut down the TV network. Although it was reopened after a court order, agents of the State Security Service, which operates as Nigeria's secret police, were stationed within the premises of the network. Shortly after, I received a tip that I was going to be framed for treason if I returned on air to continue with the program. That was when I knew I wasn't really safe in Nigeria anymore and I had to leave the country. Wow. So this is the background to my experience. And Aline, thank you so much. CPJ actually played a role in helping me to get legal representation for my asylum case here in the US. I actually got pro bono legal representation thanks to the CPJ who helped me with that.
Omai, were you reporting on anything specifically about the president that was considered offensive?
Oh, several things about the president. Things about the president, his performance in government, how Nigerians were assessing his performance, comments from Nigerians every day talking about issues in his government, and the presidency considered some of those things too embarrassing for Nigerians to see on the big screen of broadcast television.
Right. Arlene, are you seeing new laws being enacted in different countries that make it easier for governments to jail journalists?
Yes, absolutely. We're seeing new laws, especially on the sort of digital and cyber front. But we're also seeing a lot of other methods that are being used to intimidate journalists. Ohima's case is one example. We, as I said, our cutoff point for us, prison census was December 1st. There have been a number of arrests of journalists since then, particularly Ethiopia. The situation is deteriorating very quickly in Ethiopia. We've also seen the sentencing of two journalists in Egypt. Egypt is the third worst jailer of journalists, according to our census. And just this week, we had two journalists who were sentenced to 4 and 5 years. But they've spent years in jail already. You know, there are people who are released from jail and then they ending up having to spend every night in a police station because one of the conditions of their release is they go and report to the police every day and then the police officer on duty can tell them to stay where they are. So we're seeing just a welter of laws and that are being used to harass and intimidate journalists. And the number of people in jail is just one part of that story.
Omai, are other Nigerian journalists back home also at risk of being jailed or silenced?
Absolutely. Just a couple of weeks after I fled the country, other journalists were targeted. Some were arrested and detained. We had the case of a journalist, Agba Jalingo, who was arrested and detained for months without trial. We had the case of a recent case of Luka Biniat in Kaduna State in Northwest Nigeria, who was arrested for reporting about the violent killings in Kaduna State. So we've had things like that happening. And speaking of laws, there is a particular law, the Nigeria Cybercrime Act, which is being used currently to target journalists and activists. There is a particular offense described as cyber stalking, which essentially means you can't say certain things on the internet or online about powerful people in government. So it's one new law that the Nigerian government has been using to target journalists for saying things they don't like.
Oh my, have you encountered any smear campaigns or intimidation tactics since you've been exiled, since you came to the U.S.?
Oh, yes. When the news of my exit from Nigeria broke, the Nigerian government sponsored people to attack my reputation on social media. They said all sorts of nasty things about me. Nobody was after him. He's just running away, all sort of things, basically to discredit my person and my reputation. But I'm used to all of that. It comes with the territory.
Arlene, you started to mention some of the countries, some of the world's biggest defenders of press freedom. What can you tell me about China? What sort of work are Chinese journalists doing that is offending the regime there? I guess they're on the top of this list, right?
Right. Yes. China is the world's biggest jailer of journalists. And this is, I believe, the third year in a row that it has been that. The past year, what we did see was Hong Kong being included for the first time because of the arrest of eight journalists in Hong Kong. But basically, in China, what we're seeing is, you know, the crushing of dissenting voices. There are a lot of Uyghur journalists who are still in prison, some of them serving life sentences. And again, it's part of the general clampdown that we are seeing, which is especially concerning given that, you know, we're about to see China host the Winter Olympics.
Right.
And yes, and journalists are preparing to go there, and we don't hold out very high hopes that they'll be able to do much in the way of reporting. I should also mention that the Chinese government are clamping down on people, even with fairly tangential relationship to journalism. There were, I think, 10 people arrested because the Chinese government said they'd contributed to the Epoch Times. The Epoch Times editors say they're not journalists. You know, I don't know if they'd contributed material or not, but you know, so we're seeing a lot of this again. Arrests being one part of the picture and of a broader clampdown on freedom of expression on independent media.
Arlene, while we're seeing a spike in journalists jailed across the world, your report found that no journalists were jailed in North America by the time that you did this report. Does that mean those of us practicing journalism in this corner of the world are safe?
Well, safer than in a lot of other countries, certainly, but no, not completely safe. I mean, just before the report was published, Canada held two journalists for, I think it was 3 nights in custody for covering protests against a pipeline. They were released ahead of the census, so we didn't count them. But also in the US itself, we were seeing a lot of arrests of journalists. You know, not as many as during the Trump years, but still the number of arrests were 57. It's more than 140 journalists who have been assaulted in the U.S. in 2021. The actual number, according to the U.S. Freedom Tracker, is 142. Most of that was at protests. So we're talking about a range of protests. A lot of the protests, of course, were anti well, COVID related. And there's still this deep mistrust of the media. So no, not the press picture in the US is definitely not what we would like it to be.
Oh, Mike, can you talk to us about the difference in the media landscape between Nigeria and then the US, since now you're here in this country and are able to observe how freedom of the press is, you know, operates or doesn't, as the case may be?
Well, in terms of the landscape, professionally, Nigerian journalists and American journalists do the same thing. But in terms of the environment, it's definitely not the same. At least no American journalist would be afraid that they would be jailed or arrested and detained indefinitely for something they have published about a powerful person. And that is what you see increasingly happening in a place like Nigeria. In October 2019, Amnesty International launched a report that highlighted attacks on the press in Nigeria since 2015. And according to that report, at least 19 journalists and media practitioners were attacked in Nigeria between January and September 2019. It's the highest since 2015. And also in Nigeria, what we have seen is an expansion of this repression from the federal government to even subnational governments, which wasn't usually the case. So you have state governors also becoming very brutal in the way they respond to the things that journalists have published about them.
Arlene, some of the world's biggest offenders in terms of press freedom, like Turkey and Saudi Arabia, had lower numbers this year in terms of arrests, but you reported that that's sort of deceiving because they might be employing other methods of shutting down journalism, right?
Exactly. It is deceiving. You know, initially when these numbers were coming in, we were thinking, well, this is some cause for optimism. But my colleague, Sharif Mansour, wrote a piece as part of the prison census reporting that those countries are able to use other methods to silence journalists. In Turkey, for example, you know, there was a major crackdown after the attempted coup, and a lot of mainstream media have since shut down. So that a lot of journalists just aren't out there anymore. The Turkish government has also allowed a number of journalists awaiting trial to await their trial outside of jail. So we're not counting them as imprisoned. So we're seeing that in Saudi Arabia, the last sort of major wave of arrests was in 2019. But the chilling effect of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi and the arrests, that has a massive intimidatory effect. There's also the fact that surveillance is now being used to control journalists. We've read a lot about Pegasus spyware. The Saudi government is one of the governments named as having used the Pegasus spyware. So there are many, many other ways to silence journalists.
Do you think that Western media outlets, let's say just American media outlets, should be playing a role in somehow protecting press freedom around the world and reporting on exiled journalists? Is there a way to do that in a fair way that can shed light on, you know, what's happening?
Absolutely. I think it's very important. Usually, what it appears to us journalists from other parts of the world, especially from Africa, is that the U.S. media doesn't pay as much attention as we think it should to the plight of their colleagues back in Africa.
Right.
And I think things like this kind of conversation we are having now, is very important. At least there are a lot of more people here in the U.S. who would know these kind of stories. Many people don't even know the reality and the context far away in other parts of the world where these things are happening. And thanks to organizations like CPJ who have managed to call attention to these abuses and these repressions suffered by journalists around the world. But like you mentioned, journalists here in the U.S., U.S. newsrooms, U.S. media houses would help the profession generally by putting a spotlight more on stories like mine. There are hundreds of stories like mine from different parts of the world. Some were not as lucky as I was to make it alive out of my kind of situation. We've seen journalists killed, murdered. Some cases are not even known. And so it's a serious issue, because the way I see this is that the attack on one journalist is an attack not just on one person, but the entire profession and everything the profession represents.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Final question for Ohomai, if I could. What do you envision the future is for press freedom? Are you optimistic, pessimistic?
I am quite pessimistic because the future is very bleak. Governments around the world are increasingly acquiring new technologies and devising new strategies to constrain the space for expression. And that affects journalists definitely. In Nigeria recently, Twitter was banned. In June, Twitter has been banned entirely in Nigeria. And you see more of these kinds of things happening in different parts of the world. And it raises a cause for alarm. But I would say journalists and civic actors around the world need to continue just to fight, to collaborate together to ensure that journalists are safe around the world. But with what is happening right now, I just think it's going to get worse.
Well, thank you for sharing your story, Omai, and I wish you only the safest future going forward. I hope you continue to work in this field of journalism. I've been speaking to Arlene Getz, editorial director at the Committee to Protect Journalists, and Ohomai Amaize, an exiled Nigerian journalist now living in the U.S. Arlene, Ohomai, thank you so much for coming on The Takeaway.
Thank you,
Matt.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.